Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Okay, and I am ready to go. Hello, all. I am Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today, and I guess the week, because it's Friday, make sense.
And I'm Justin Ho, and as Kimberly just said, it is Friday, which around here means Happy Hour Friday, economics on tap, as it's known around here. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, and so today is the day where we play our favorite game, Half Full, Half Empty. We will also do the news, but before we get to any of that, Justin, what are you drinking?
I was going to wait to open my bottle of my humble bottle of Pacifico on mic, so here, I'm going to do it. Wait
Pacifico.
For it.
Pacifico.
Come on. I don't know if anyone can hear that.
I could hear that. Pacifico. It's very nice audio. What is Pacifico?
It's like the standard Mexican lager. You know, you get it in a 24-pack, put a lime in it.
I don't know.
Today I've got a key lime instead of a regular lime, but I think that works.
Okay. Because it is cold and snowy here in D.C., just like much of this part of the country, I am drinking sake. And I have, like, my little Pyrex glass bowl of hot water with my little bottle in there trying to get it to the exact right temperature. And, yeah, that's the life I'm living right now.
That sounds good, though. I mean, warm drinks. We were just talking about the bomb cyclone that you're dealing with pretty soon.
Yeah, I think it's mainly to the north of us. But yes, it is going to be quite the weekend of weather. And hopefully folks are able to stay off the roads as much as they can. But
are you a sake drinker?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I had actually planned. I was on chatting online yesterday and I was like, I need to come up with a sake cocktail. And then I ran out of time today because I was doing too much stuff. So I just decided to heat it up. But yeah, when I'm cold and I feel like a warm drink, I'm definitely a fan. I don't like cold sake, though. I know that's like way more fashionable, but it's not my thing.
Yeah, I just tried some. I think it's called. Yeah, I do. There's a brand of unpasteurized sake that I've been getting into. I don't really know the name of it, but it's delicious.
It's like cloudy and stuff.
This one's kind of clear, actually. It's there's a sake distillery. I guess there's only like three or four, basically like a handful of sake distilleries in the United States. And one of them's in like the south part of San Francisco, and they do an unpasteurized sake that's delicious. But yeah, it's served cold usually.
Okay. I'll have to track it down and try it. Why don't you go first with your news, because yours seems like more newsy.
Yeah, I'm kind of nervous about yours. I saw the link. Okay. But yeah, okay, I'll start with mine.
Why?
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. But mine is I was joking with senior producer Bridget Bonner about this. It kind of sounds like a Marketplace morning meeting pitch, but we got a bunch of economic data today, and I think the most interesting one that I wanted to talk about was consumer spending. So this was for December. We got the consumer spending numbers from the Commerce Department, and basically the headline takeaway was that spending was down pretty big when it comes to goods, which of course is the thing that's been up almost throughout the entire pandemic. And kind of a similar story happened, I think, on the 14th of this month, where retail sales numbers came out. And what a lot of people were saying and the sort of narrative out there is that people pulled forward their spending because of all the supply chain disruptions. And decided to say, hey, you know, I'll do my Christmas shopping in October or something like that. But I don't know. I mean, I've been a little skeptical because I feel like that's not the only reason. Like, I'm sure plenty of people listen to Marketplace every day and, you know, reacted accordingly, knew about the supply chain issues. But I doubt everyone was planning their spending that strategically. And I don't know. I'm a little skeptical. What do you think about that?
I think a lot of people really did plan their spending strategically. I mean, granted, my circle of friends and family happened to be connected to a business and economics journalist, so that may skew the results. But I definitely heard from a lot of people that they were shifting their spending plans or, you know, stocking up on things in anticipation of stuff. I mean, I've been buying less stuff than I was, you know, a couple of months ago, and not just for the holidays, but, you know, I kind of did all of the I'm depressed about the pandemic shopping I'm going to do. And now I'm just like, okay, I should probably save money and, you know, do all of the half finished house projects for which I bought stuff, but I haven't actually done. And I wonder if people are just kind of working through what they've got and kind of reevaluating what we're spending on, because, you know, we've been in this for 2 years and people bought stuff, didn't make it any better. So maybe we're just like, okay, this is not the fix. Let's try something else.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at, because like I saw this tweet earlier this morning from an economist, Julia Coronado, who's a friend of the show, economist at Macro Policy Perspectives. And she brought up this term that she sort of coined called consumer exhaustion. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the idea that, like, yes, we have been buying a lot throughout the past couple of years, but maybe we're kind of tired of it. Maybe we've spent a lot already and supply chain issues or not, maybe we're kind of hitting our limit. Like, we're not getting relief aid from Congress anymore. You know, inflation is obviously playing a factor. And, you know, maybe it's time to just settle down for a bit.
Yeah. I think there's just been so much reevaluating of how we're living our lives. And maybe part of that is and you know, inflation with prices going up, it gives you that extra moment of pause to think, like, do I really want to be buying this at this price? You know, do I really want to spend money on this or do I want to do something else?
Yeah, and that was one of her points. Like, I guess services spending did rise in December, whereas goods spending dropped. And Julia's point was that, you know, maybe we are spending on the things that we need to do, like going to the dentist and getting your hair cut. But, you know, maybe it's time to hold off on that new appliance purchase or you know, new washing machine or whatever.
I haven't had a haircut since 2003, but I did go get my nails done in December.
Well, that's it. I mean, restaurant spending is still rising, right? I mean, services spending is higher, but that good spending, I don't know. I feel like there are some people out there that are kind of just tired of spending.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, mine are way less economic, but, you know, fun. So the first one is this article that I saw. I guess it came up on Pocket, but it's from this online news site called Input, and it is about circus performers and how the American circus is in decline, but circus performers are getting all of this new lease on life on, like, TikTok and Instagram because they can do their performances and get followers, and people like to watch them, like, do their flame throwing and jumps and things like that, which struck me because I follow a woman on Instagram who basically just, like, twirls a stick all the time. And sometimes it's a lightsaber and sometimes it's a bow staff and sometimes it's, like, nunchucks or whatever. And it's just fascinating to me. So that's what kind of drew me to the article. But then I realized in reading it, I know one of the people that they interviewed, who's a public radio reporter in Boston, who I worked with once upon a time. And his name is Jack Lepiars. And he has apparently, since in the years in which I've spoken to him, also become famous on TikTok for his circus performances, which he was doing back then. But now he's famous on TikTok for it. Who knew?
I was thinking about this. I don't know. Have you ever been to like the circus? Have you ever like gotten a ticket and gone to and you know the local event?
When I was a kid, my third grade teacher, with whom I had a relationship through my whole childhood, she would take me to the circus often, or and some of the other kids that you know she connected well with, and we would like go in a group to the circus. So yeah, I went to the circus quite a bit as a kid, and you know, the cotton candy, and then you know you become an adult and you hear all the terrible things. But I definitely was a fan of the circus as a kid. Were you?
It was always this abstract thing that you'd see in pop culture, and like I'd never been. I went to Cirque du Soleil a couple times, I think, as a kid, but that's not quite the same.
That is just that very classic, fancy for a kid.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a journalist, or you know, before he retired, and we got press coverage. So,
okay,
that's what got us into it.
Okay, so to say that's very fancy for a kid. I saw Cirque du Soleil as an adult, but never as a kid. But
it was good. It was good.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we should probably play the game now.
All right, let's play the game.
Okay, this is Half Full, Half Empty, where we give you our thoughts and feelings on various topics. Drew Jostad is our wonderful host today. Drew, let's go.
Are you guys half full or half empty on a Federal Reserve digital currency, a Fed coin?
You want to take this one?
Not really. You know, I did an interview about this for Marketplace Tech, so I understand this idea that the Federal Reserve basically put out a paper starting the process of looking into whether or not it would be a good idea for the United States to have its own digital currency. I think China already has a digital currency, and this is, you know, slightly different than, you know, your Bitcoin or your Ethereum or whatever else, because it is actually, you know, belonging to the government. Half full. I think we're probably going to end up with some version of this at some point. I'm not sure if we have the infrastructure and access and privacy guardrails and equity needs to make this work in the rollout for everyone. And I just hope that it doesn't create a system of winners and losers as this happens. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's the Fed. So presumably as a banking regulator, you know, a regulator in general, it will kind of bring some order to this space, which still kind of seems like the Wild West. And I mean, I'll go with half full too. I mean, I was just talking to a banker, a pretty small banker down in South Carolina, and he just said, you know, I'm thinking a lot about this and I'm really interested in this space in general. And I'm kind of waiting on the Fed to get involved in general and just sort of, you know, guide us into this obviously burgeoning field. And I don't know. I mean, maybe the Fed joining in makes it sound more legitimate. Is that a fair take?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I think, look, the Fed and other agencies that are going to get involved in this are in the investigation stage of it. And I think that's appropriate. It's appropriate to be looking into it. It's appropriate to be gathering information, to be hearing from stakeholders. But I just hope that people really think cautiously about how we move into this space.
Next topic. Are you half full or half empty on Tesla making humanoid robots?
I'll take it. I'm going to go half empty. Sorry, Elon. I don't see how... You know, what's the business case here? What's the purpose? What are we doing? You know, is this a growth industry? What are we trying to do here?
I am going to say half full, because for all the things you want to say about Elon Musk, he jump started and really pushed our adoption of electric vehicles. And I do think that there will eventually be a role for humanoid robots to play in our society and our culture, particularly when it comes to things like elder care and some types of manufacturing. And we have a shortage of a lot of workers that if you can automate some of those things, it's dystopian, but it's probably going to be necessary. And so that technology has to come from somewhere. And the quicker we get it, the more quickly we can start having the important societal discussions about the role that it plays and how we are going to adapt to it. So I'm going to go to half full.
Do you think there's a significance of it being a humanoid robot as opposed to, you know, a rolling box on wheels? I mean, what do you think about the humanoid aspect that, you know, what will help those kind of roles that you're thinking it might fill?
I think it might help people feel a little less like they're interacting with a machine. I mean, think about how differently we interact with automated personal assistants when we give them a human name compared to when it's just a disembodied voice. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those things are sort of subtle clues to our brains of connection. And in a world and environment where people feel less connection, I think there will be an appeal for some people to have something humanoid-ish. This is why so many of the really advanced robots that we first saw were little dogs, you know, because it's cute. And some of these, you know, people loved Furbies because it was something that looked like it had an emotion. I know I'm dating myself with the Furby reference here, but it was soft and it was cuddly and it looked like it had emotions and feelings. And so I think when you do have these elements of tricking your brain into the human connection, for good or bad, it makes people like it more. Can be creepy, yeah. Though.
Next topic, thoughts, feelings on Spotify removing Neil Young's music.
I have been so fascinated by this. So I'm going to go half full because while I don't think it had a huge impact for, you know, Neil Young's music to come down off of Spotify, the attention that Neil Young taking his music off of Spotify or Spotify removing it or whatever happening pushed all of these people to cancel their Spotify premium subscriptions in protest, because it kind of clicked in people's brains that there was an action they could take about COVID-19 misinformation, which was to punish the platform hosting Joe Rogan, which I think is pretty fascinating because it has become less about Neil Young and more about this thing.
Yeah, I also wonder, I mean, I thought I saw in a quick article that I read about it that Neil Young actually gets a decent amount of royalties from Spotify, and you know, it made me, I don't know where we are in that discussion, whether, you know, doing this is a, you know, huge sacrifice, for instance, for an established artist. I mean, I'm just honestly curious as to whether we'll see more stuff like this down the road or whether this stops with Neil Young. But I'd love to know. I mean, I honestly don't. But how, you know, whether big artists actually need those Spotify, you know, those clicks, those listens, or whether they can feel free to use it as a platform for activism.
Half full or half empty on Lowe's Hardware opening mini Petcos in some locations?
I'm going to go with half full for a very unrelated reason. If you guys are ever on the road, Lowe's, fantastic place to use a restroom. Just going to say that. If you need a place to stop by, if you see a Lowe's on the side of the road, more locations, more restrooms. It's the time of COVID. You don't have to interact with anybody. More Lowe's sounds great.
Wow. That is not at all where I thought you were going with that. how did you first learn this?
You know, I saw a Lowe's off the side of the road in Ventura, California. And, you know, my wife and I needed to use the restroom. And we just tried it out. It was in the middle of COVID. We were sort of scared about you know, a restaurant or like having to interact with people. But, you know, these big warehouse stores have a lot of space, have a lot of headroom, have a lot of air ventilation. So that's my take.
That is such a good point. I never would have thought of that, but huh. Well, okay. That made me smart.
What about you?
I'm going to go half full to anything that can help all of these pandemic pet owners who have been struggling to get their dogs and cats into overwhelmed vets. Like, my vet right now is not accepting any new patients, and a good friend of mine got a dog during the pandemic and was put on a waiting list to get access to a vet, and her dog had a little crisis. Like, he ate some garbage and started, you know, doing all the things dogs do when they eat garbage, and she couldn't get him in for a couple of days, even the emergency room. And, you know, so increasing access to pet services, great, sure. And, you know, if this means that the next time I have to go to the hardware store, I interact with dogs, I will count that as a win. Sure. Yes, I'll take it.
All right. To be clear, I don't think that they're like opening more Lowe's. I'm sorry, Justin. I think it's they're just opening Petco's like
in the
Lowe's.
Oh, that's so disappointing.
Yeah. You might be stuck there.
Oh, man.
Half full
or
half?
Do you have any pets, Drew?
I do not. No, I do not.
Okay.
half full or half empty on the chances of Disney picking up the Korean Disney Princess musical.
I don't know this story.
So a musical theater composer has been putting out TikToks of the original song she wrote for a Korean Disney Princess musical, and they are going viral. And people are calling upon Disney to turn the idea into reality.
I am all the way full on Disney doing anything that will make them money.
Yeah, I mean, didn't Netflix come out the other day and they said, like, hey, we're really worried about the competition? I mean, this sounds like more of that. I don't know.
I will have to go and look at these videos and judge for myself. My TikTok and Instagram Reels viewing lately has just been all like Encanto Reels with various people singing the songs from that movie because they're great. Have you seen the movie? Oh,
have
dogs
I seen
in
the movie?
My building. Yes, have you seen Encanto?
No, I haven't.
You gotta watch it. It's great. You know what? I take that back. I have a terrible track record on this show of recommending movies and actually getting people to watch them. So never mind, Justin. Watch whatever you like. Spend your downtime in whatever way makes you happy. You know,
I did promptly cancel my Disney subscription after finishing Mandalorian, so it's going to be a little while before I start that up again.
But what about the other one, the Boba Fett series?
I haven't started that. Haven't been that interested.
Hmm. Okay. That's the end. Okay. All right, then. That is it for us today. Make Me Smart. We'll be back on Monday. Until then, please keep sending your questions, comments, make me smiles, and if you want to risk it, movie recommendations to makemesmart@marketplace.org. Or you can leave us a voice message. We are at 508-827-6278. That is 508-UBSMART.
I'm waiting.
You can do whatever you want.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera and Marque Green. Today's episode was engineered by Drew Jostad. The senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
The team behind our game, Half Full, Half Empty, is Mel Rosenberg and Emily McCune. The theme music for Half Full, Half Empty was written by, again, the amazing Drew Jostad. And the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
How'd that go? Did we win?
Yes.
Everybody wins.
All we do is win, 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 no matter what.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.